This week on The Big Show, on the heels of the WGA East releasing their list of the 101 funniest screenplays, we respond with our list of the 15 funniest African-American screenplays. Find out which popular writer-actor dominated the list, plus we'll review several movies this week featuring actors and filmmakers with awards aspirations. Plus, we'll have entertainment news and a whole lot more on episode 280 of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go.
Now let's start the show. Step out of the cold. We come from the cold. To the top of the globe. The pimps and the hoes. The folks and the stones. Whoever you ride for, we back for some more. Get back to the show. You know.
Afternoon and welcome to another edition of The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon, and it is another nice sort of, you know, I'm not going to call it Indian summer, but nice weather day here in the Northeast. You know, generally as a rule, there is no rule when it comes to winter, because that weather could either be really, really cold early, or can be nice like it is now, setting us up for the whammy in about 6 to 8 weeks. Time will tell, but today we are enjoying it. Beautiful day here in Washington, D.C., looking out the window of our studio today, and another action-packed show, and kind of a hint moving forward. I know you hear me say that every week, but they all are, because, you know, we always lead up to like two major seasons every year. One is the summer movie season, which usually kicks off in earnest early May. And then there's, of course, the award season that kicks off in earnest around now, you know, mid-November going in toward the last 6 weeks to the end of the year. And, you know, we're enjoying, all of the offerings that will be films that will be much discussed for award consideration officially probably in about a month. So today on the show, there are six movies that are going to be reviewed on the show today, and I will provide some very definitive commentary a little later on in the show. I'm just going to put that out as a tease. I want you to kind of be surprised a little later when it comes, so I'm not going to say it now. So six movies coming out today, and among those movies, of course, are inspirational tales like The 33, By All American, super award contenders like Brooklyn, which finally hits theaters after Travis and I got a chance to see it at Sundance Film Fest back in late January, as well as Spotlight, we're going to talk about today. So those movies will be coming up a little later on in the show. Those reviews, I should say, are coming up a little later on in the show. Also, as I said at the top, last night, the Writers Guild of America East released their list of the 100, and it actually was a tie, so they had a 101 funniest screenplays of all time. And, you know, I looked over the list, and as expected, there was a huge hole in color in this list, and that's not just African American, but Asian American, Hispanic American, etc. I wrote a piece about it over on thefilmgordon.com and released a list of the entire 101 films that were highlighted. In the next segment coming up, I'm going to talk about the 15 funniest black screenplays. And we're going to do that. And there, of course, there are a couple that I really like that didn't have African-American participation, but we will dive into that a little later on. Also coming up pretty shortly is going to be entertainment news. I'm going to stand in and do the entertainment news again today. So all that's coming up. But first, off the top, really interesting week. As I said, I've spent a lot of time watching movies this week and having an opportunity to see some films that I can't discuss. And the reason why we can't discuss them is because the studio puts an embargo on those, which means that we have to review the movies the week they open, or at least the week they open either in New York or L.A. So if there's movies that we've had an opportunity to see that won't open in either of these markets for several weeks, we have to kind of sit on it and sit on interviews and sit on conversations that we have, which sometimes makes it difficult because we want to share what's going on because there's a lot of activity going on. So, yeah, just keep sticking with us week to week. As I said, coming in the month of December as a rule, I love using as a rule as a phrase, as a rule, we look back at the end of the year. So at that point, we start having shows with the top 10 movies of the year, the worst 10 movies of the year. I actually want to break it into genres as well as look at comedies and foreign language films and dramas, performances, things of that nature. So all that's coming up next month. As I said, keep listening every week. We're here on Thursdays at 1 o'clock, unless there's a movie, and then we'll move the show either earlier or later. So just keep sticking with us. Now, this week in entertainment news, there was actually a lot of activity, and the most recent thing that was announced last night was Morgan Freeman signing on with Millennium for a spy action comedy called Cold Warriors. And in this story, of course, Freeman stars as a retired CIA agent who enlists the help of his video game programmer stepson to finish a Cold War era mission. Now, this film is being described as Taken meets Get Smart. I just got silent for a second. I'm trying to picture that. Taken meets Get Smart. Okay. And of course, one of the notes that we received is that the story takes an ominous turn after the gamer foregoes a video game conference in Paris to join a search after he discovers that his stepfather, played by Freeman, is a former CIA agent. So at some point in theater, or some point soon, they will announce the filming schedule for this film. And I'm assuming we're talking this time next year or early 2017, this will probably be hitting theaters. So Morgan Freeman, his latest project, Morgan, of course, his upcoming project, is London Has Fallen, which is the sequel to, what the heck was the name of the first one? Wow. This is the one with him, forget what was Fallen. Wow. I'm sorry, I just had a brain fart because, again, I just want to let you know some of the stuff we read, but some of it is also memory. London Has Fallen, Freeman's next picture, is coming out in March. Also, he's going to be seen in the remake of Ben-Hur, please, no comment, no need to remake Ben-Hur, studio did it anyway, and he's also in post-production for his film Going in Style for New Line Cinema, so I was absolutely right that you probably will see Cold Warriors probably in the next 12 to about 16 months, because Freeman's got a lot of stuff going on. Also this week, it was announced that Jada Pinkett Smith is returning back to television. She's developed a show that she will both star in and executive produce called Murder Town, centering on a beautiful and complicated prostitute played by Jada, who makes history as Wilmington, Delaware's first African-American district attorney. In the film or in the show, she will find herself confronted by old loyalties and loves and a shocking revelation about her murdered husband and a polarizing, racially charged case that threatens to burn her and her city to the ground. For people who are talking about why Jada Pinkett Smith is returning back to television, we're not talking about Hawthorne, we're talking about Gotham. Who I thought in a show and a role playing Fish Mooney last year that I thought she was really, really suited for, but she she stuck to her guns and told them that she would give them one season, and one season is what they got. And to their credit, on Gotham, they never officially killed her off the show. She's just not there. So the door is open for Smith to return to the show if she chooses. But it clearly looks like she's going in a different direction. Now, also this week, Mike Epps. I'm sorry, not Mike Epps. I just saw Epps. It's Omar Epps. Is signed on for the new David E. Talbert film, which is called A Myers Christmas. And this film tells the story of a family that is forced to come together for their first Christmas since the death of the family matriarch. Joining Omar Epps in this cast, of course, are Gabrielle Union, Danny Glover, Monique, Kimberly Elise, and Jesse T. Usher. This film will be produced by Will Packer. We had Packer as a guest on the show probably about a little over a year and a half ago. One of the biggest producers in Hollywood that people really don't talk about. Packer's next film is the sequel to Ride Along, Ride Along 2. And, of course, that drops on Dr. King's weekend in about two months. But he and David E. Talbert are getting together for this film. No doubt it'll be funny. No doubt it'll make plenty of money. And no doubt Will Packer's imprint will continue to grow throughout Hollywood. But, yeah, that's what Omar Epps has got coming up. And I got a couple more items before we get out of here and go to our next segment. One of the other pieces that I really wanted to talk about is one of my favorite animated movies from, I think it was last year, of course, is the Lego Movie. And, of course, the Batman character, you know, you can say what you want about Superman being, like, the number one comic superhero. He may be, but Superman does not garner the respect that Batman garners, you know, from The Dark Knight with Christopher Nolan doing a three-arc trilogy, which is, if you know anything about me, is one of my favorite superhero trilogies of all time. I think The Dark Knight in itself is probably the greatest superhero movie ever produced. Well, the Lego folks are jumping on the Batman bandwagon as well, doing not a sequel to the Lego Movie, but a spinoff called the Lego Batman Movie. And this week they found their Commissioner Gordon, played by none other than Mariah Carey. Okay. I know you're going, huh, at home? Mariah Carey, this is animated, so she'll be voicing it. It'd be interesting if, and I'm sure they'll probably work it into the screenplay, that Gordon will get a chance to sing. But Mariah Carey, as I said, is joining the cast. It already has Ralph Fiennes, who will be playing Alfred the Butler, Will Arnett, who will return as Batman, Michael Cera as Robin, Rosario Dawson is Batgirl, and Zach Galifianakis, who is playing the Joker. So that film, I'm assuming, will be coming as well, either late 2016 or early 2017. Can't wait. Anything that's got Batman in it, Tim Gordon, Film Gordon, you've got my attention. And the final story before we get out of here today is there's a new television show coming to Fox, I think it is, coming to NBC in early January, and of course it stars none other than Jennifer Lopez, and it's called Shades of Blue. They just started running the trailer and commercials for it about a week ago, but in the series, Lopez will play Holly Santos, an FBI agent and single mom assigned to an anti-corruption task force. It also co-stars Ray Liotta. You know, Lopez, I've said for years, I think, is a pretty decent actor. Or actually, in this case, decent. Well, she is a decent actor. I think she fell into a trap for many years where she was doing these romantic comedies, these silly films like Made in Manhattan and Wedding Planner. You know, I mean, well, if Wedding Planner is her movie. If it's not, you know what I'm talking about. She did a movie where she played a wedding planner. But she played all of these therapy kind of romantic comedies that I guess her people steered her into those things. And people forget that she did films like Out of Sight and U-Turn. So J-Lo can do gritty. And I'm anxious to see. I'm going to give this show kind of an opportunity. I want to probably watch about two or three episodes to see if I can capture the rhythm of the show. But hats off to her. I know this is the final season of American Idol, so she's going to have some downtime on her hands. This would be her show. We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to come back on the other side, and it is going to be time to talk about the 15 top funniest African-American screenplays. You guys, keep it where you got it. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, and I'll be right back.
I was young. I was surviving the times. Waiting for my moment, I was destined to shine. Lil Ray had an NXX. I was hoping I'm next, wanting bracelets. Never had a rope on my neck, unless I was holding Ty-A chain. Rest in peace. Even though that night you flipped on us, you warned us. If you came back and we still in the corners, we goners. Moving on to move your arm and your watch to another time on the block. Cause this 40 side where they said shorty rhyme. Tragedy, he used to come through all the time. I'm talking juice food, not what the word defined. He had a sister named Erin, for sure was fine. That was my first crush. I bought my first mic. I wrote my first verse. I was about nine. I was about mine. Fantasized house buying. Met Paul. He wore some big glasses. Him and Mel Korn took me where G-Rap lived. I was happy just getting some answers. I ain't even know what a record advance was. I'm seeing sex in the studio bathrooms with rap dudes thinking, wow, she moved me. Same girl then, right now's a groupie. Back then, she was like a star in the movie. Lost jewelry and expensive Gucci. Next stop, paid in full, posse recruits me. Knew they were some millionaires, they ropes were dookie. Every B man looking like touchy, shooting. You see, every time Rod didn't show, I get to record demos at attempts to blow. I wonder, could they tell? How did they know? 16 years later, here I go.
Yes, and welcome back to the show. It is 17 minutes after the hour, and of course, that was Esco, Nasty Nas, probably my favorite hip-hop artist, Nasir Jones, better known as Nas, and of course, I'll be featuring his music, as we probably do a lot every week, man. Just a lot of time listening to Nas, man. He's a poet. I love poetry. It's kind of a match made in heaven, but welcome back to the show. And before we get into our next segment, I just want to remind people that if you live in the DMV, and for people who are outside of Washington, D.C., the DMV stands for the District, Maryland, and Virginia, all right? If you live in the DMV, I'm inviting you to join me and the Washington, D.C. Film Society Monday night as I host the fall edition of their Coming Attractions program. Now, we'll show and discuss some of the upcoming movie trailers, and I'll put my own unique spin on what will be showing up in movie theaters in the near future. Now, for more information, just email them at info@dcfilmsociety.org or check out their website at dcfilmsociety.org. If you're coming, I hope to see you there. If you ain't coming, we'll just keep on talking about it, and at some point you'll go, you know, I'm interested in that. I'm in town. I'm going to check that out. All right, so that's this coming Monday night. They're coming to track this program. All right, so as I said earlier at the top of the show, I wrote a piece early this morning regarding the Writers Guild of America East releasing their list of the 101 funniest screenplays of all time, which spanned over a century of screenplays. And I went through the list, and truth be told, I mean, the lion's share of these films I've seen, probably about 80 to 85 of the 101, and I would admit that there are plenty of classic work that is spotlighted as a part of their list. But I wrote, my title was 101 Funniest Screenplays, Fade to Blackout. And one of the things that I mentioned, which, you know, I just wanted to kind of like preference this before I kind of like put this opinion out there, is if you don't know or understand my background, I'm not just a guy that just kind of looks at film as a hobby. Film is sort of kind of like in my DNA. I've been watching them probably for over 40 years, so like four decades. I've worked in the business as a film critic for probably 25. I'm talking about when people give me a check. Not I'm just going to the movies and I'm like the movie guy, because I used to do that too back in the mid-80s. I was a guy who would go to all of the films, and people would be like, hey, you seen it? Yes, I've seen the movie. but I've been cashing checks as a film critic for close to 25 years. I've created award shows. I'm president of the Film Critics Association. I teach movies. I have a foundation that teaches young children about movies. So movies, you know, I'm Film Gordon. It's what I do, right? So I'm not saying that to be boastful. I'm just saying that to say that I really have more than just one foot in the film lane. I study this industry. So having said that, I wrote this morning, as someone who studied the industry from various perspectives, because of the inner mechanisms dating back to the inception of Hollywood, the attitudes of the time over the past century, and the lack of opportunities afforded to screenwriters of color, it makes perfect sense why there's such an obvious lack of candidates in film on the Writer Guild's 101 list of the funniest screenplays. Now, despite these notable shortcomings, the fact that the work of African-American screenwriters is judged quite differently from the work of their counterparts. Now, saying that, I'll just put in another brief kind of piece that I've noticed. I have over 50 members, probably closer to 60 members of our Film Critic Association here just in Washington, D.C. And there are films that are made by black filmmakers or have storylines about African Americans that there are certain white critics that I know, who I will not name, that will not support or go see these films because they don't think that these are films made for their audience and that their audience will get nothing out of the film or get anything out of the film. So that's in 2015, and that's from a film critique standpoint. So if you're thinking about a list that spans 100 years, and we're talking about this is 2015, so Birth of a Nation is 101 years old, and the attitudes that Hollywood had, as I said, that have been pervasive for over a century, it makes perfect sense. So I think in addition to that, as I said, I think that, you know, if you look at all the branches that vote either for the Academy, the Golden Globes, where you have more of a European audience, but it's still a European audience of older, predominantly male, you know, males that look at these films. And I don't think that films like A Friday, A Coming to America, 48 Hours, which I think actually Eddie Murphy had a couple films that made the list, Blazing Saddles. There's so many movies that we find, we being people of color, find funny that didn't even merit one of the 101 spots that were on there. So having said that and set that up, I'll just go through 15 movies, and I had to really kind of like go off the top of my head because I wrote all of this in about the last 2 hours. So there may be something that I missed, but I clearly went for a combination of what was popular, things that made me laugh, and movies that I think that have kind of stood the test of time. So having said that, let me just quickly go through my list of the 15 funniest screenplays. Now, again, all of these were screenplays that had some black participation. Somebody black either came up with the story or wrote the screenplay for some of these movies. So without any further ado, and none of these are in any order from 1 to 15, but it's just 15 of them. So number one I have on my list is Boomerang. And, of course, written by Reginald Hudlin. Fantastic comedy. You know, Eddie Murphy had exploded. You know, he'd done a couple of comedy specials in the 1980s. Of course, Delirious and Raw. Of course, it was Coming to America and Golden Child and 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop. So Eddie Murphy was a super duper star by 1992. And they kind of did a film where Eddie played kind of the persona, you know, this playboy, ad, you know, womanizing ad exec. And very funny, you know, supported by David Alan Grier, Martin Lawrence, John Witherspoon, Halle Berry, Robin Gibbons. Funny, funny film. If you haven't checked it out, Boomerang made my list. Number two, of course, is another Eddie Murphy film. And this film, Coming to America, personally, I think it's the funniest movie that Eddie Murphy's ever done. I know people will talk Nutty Professor, and I know people will talk Harlem Nights, where you had a lot of ensemble play. But this movie here, where Eddie Murphy literally played at minimum, I would say at minimum four characters, maybe more, but at minimum he played four characters in this film. That in addition to his starring role, I know Arsenio played several characters in this thing as well. Very funny, just a basic story about a prince from Africa who's coming to America looking for his queen, and he ends up in Queens, New York, and the adventures that Prince Akeem and Simi get into. This movie, I can always tell movies that are really popular by the amount of times people steal them from me, meaning that, you know, I'll have a copy of a movie, somebody will say, can I borrow that movie? That movie suddenly disappears. I have to buy it again. I lend it out again. It disappears again. This movie was stolen no more than four times from me during the run that it was out. So I know Coming to America is a really popular movie because it couldn't stay in my house. The next movie on my list is a movie that was secretly bootlegged through Hollywood for about 2 years before it actually got distributed. And, of course, that movie is none other than Rusty Cundiff's rap spoof, Fear of a Black Hat, which I thought at the time is an ingenious movie. Didn't age well. I don't think it gets the respect it should have gotten or shouldn't have received over time. But it, along with CB4, which is also on the list, two films that at the time I think came in really early, spoofing hip-hop in a way. And I think somebody probably needs to come with another film around now, since we've had so many different rap personalities and archetypes that have been in the game now, that I think now is the time to properly do a spoof. But again, those two movies, both CB4 and Fear of a Black Hat, very, very funny for at the time. Now, for the next film, I'm going to go back to 1987. After Spike Lee had released She's Gotta Have It in 1986, there was a boom of young African-Americans who saw what Lee did and were inspired by it. One of those people was Robert Townsend, who channeled his frustrations of the type of auditions and roles he was being offered into a film called Hollywood Shuffle. And Hollywood Shuffle, at the time, was the legendary film that was made with Townsend literally maxing out all his credit cards in order to get this story made. I mean, this film, it's funny. I mean, I was watching clips of it in preparation for today's show. The movie still is funny to me. So Hollywood Shuffle made the list. Other films that are on the list, of course, are Friday from F. Gary Gray, written by Ice Cube. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker from Keenan Ivory Wayans. Now, Blazing Saddles, which for a long time, Richard Pryor, who co-wrote the movie with Mel Brooks, didn't get credit because he was initially supposed to star in it. But, you know, due to his drug problems, I'll just say, medical drug problems at the time, he didn't wind up starring in it. But many of the skit ideas he came up with made this film, which is still considered iconic, and actually did make the list of 101 movies. Other movies on the list, of course, are Barbershop, another film that starred Ice Cube and it had his participation as well as being directed by Tim Story. Eddie Murphy once again with The Nutty Professor. Black Dynamite from Scott Sanders is co-written by him, Byron Mims. Very funny spoof of kind of like blaxploitation films from the 1970s. Think Like a Man, all right, based on the Steve Harvey book. Kevin Hart has taken that, and that really launched him into the stratosphere as a comedic actor. And finally, House Party again. I will talk about House Party because the late, great Robin Harris was really sort of kind of the engine of that film and kind of like perished a little bit after that film was made. But that would be my list of the 15 top black screenplays. If I've left anything off my list, you are welcome to email me at filmgordon@gmail.com, or you can just go on either Facebook or Twitter and send me a message at filmgordon if I've left off any movies on your list. Now, the two that I wanted to put on the list that couldn't make it because there were no black writers Of course, well, Which Way Is Up, which I think, bar none, is Richard Pryor's funniest film, where he plays multiple roles, a la Eddie Murphy, and does it very well and very effective, as well as Car Wash, which is another film that I thought was amazingly funny, that also featured Pryor and George Carlin, never in the same scene together, but both being in the same movie, directed by Michael Schultz. Didn't make the list, no African-American participation. So one more time really quickly before we go to break, let me just read this list once again. It is Boomerang, Coming to America, Fear of a Black Hat, Uptown Saturday Night, Hollywood Shuffle, Friday, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, Blazing Saddles, Barbershop, The Nutty Professor, CB4, Black Dynamite, Think Like a Man, and House Party. All right? We're going to take a break right now. You guys keep it where you got it, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Wendell Pierce, and you're listening to The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon on Film Gordon Radio.
Be ready.
Yeah. Word. Got some Remy Martin, some good-ass cigars. Check it out. Ayo, late night candlelight fiend with Diesel in his needle. Queensbridge leader, no equal. I come from the will of Ezekiel to pop $1,000 bottles of scotch, smoke pot, and heal a people. Any rebuttal to what I utter, get box cut, encounter many bad honeys. I slut, it's a high number. Name a nigga under the same sky that I'm under. Who gets money but may fly? Yeah, I wonder. I'm slutter's love, but Nas pops up. Stars get starstruck, panties start dripping. The ways of Carlito, blaze, torpedo cigars, drop rolls, hoes, drop flows. Blue to 13 freaks, women. Nice size, ironic, cautious, thick, brown, and gorgeous. It ain't my fault. Semi-automatic weapons, I brought the world crazy. I'm rich and I'm girl crazy. Make them convince them all to praise me. The ideology is confusion. I lose them. Fellace me, who hate me? My gun off safety. Just a tunnel escape key, my jury in HD. My Venice shades. I'm not in the winters of my life or the beginning stage. I am the dragon. Maserati pumping Biggie, the great legend. Blasting. I'm after the actors who play Faith Evans. My little Jackie O'Nassis. I'm so high I never land like Mike Jackson's crib. Vest on 45, still crack your ribs. Sack religion. Talk trash about the nasty kid. Pass nasty now. Gross and repulsive. Talk money. Is you joking? Cash everywhere in my bank and the sofa and the walls and the cars and my wallet and my pocket on the floor.
Yes. And of course, Nas is still nasty in 2015. That, of course, was from his album from several years ago. Love that, brother. But welcome back to the show. It is 32 minutes after the hour, and let us not pretend it is now time for us to go straight to these movies. We got so many of them today to hit. Here we go. As I said at the top of the show, we have six movies today, six, count them. Lots of offerings or different options for you in theaters this week. And in this segment, I'm going to do three, of course, the 33, By the Sea, and My All-American. And up first, of course, will be the 33. And, of course, the 33 tells a story of, based on a true story of disaster, which struck on August 5th, 2010, as a copper and gold mine collapsed in Chile, trapping 33 men underground. With more than 2,000 feet of rock in their way, members of a rescue team worked tirelessly, for 69 days to save the seemingly doomed crew. And, of course, this film stars, or actually is directed by Spanish director Patricia Riggin, and it's stars, wow, it's kind of an all-star cast. Antonio Banderas really is kind of like the star as Mario, Super Mario Sepulveda. It also featured Rodrigo Santoro, Juliette Binoche, Lou Diamond Phillips. I'm trying to think, Gabriel Byrne were all in this film. Soundtrack was done by the late, great James Horner. And today, because of time, I wanted to get rid of a lot of the clips and just kind of have a conversation about these movies. The 33 is one of those movies that, you know, Hollywood kind of makes that I think fits into a certain mold. That, you know, we're going to tell a story, you know, something that's inspirational based on a true story. And I almost tease people a lot of times and call it the Love Boat model, where, you know, you have the introduction of the story, tragedy strikes in the second act, and then the third act kind of shows the people kind of like, you know, the resolution of all the problems. I call it the Love Boat. If you watch any episode of the Love Boat, they are all the same. You can almost look at your clock, and by virtue, when it's about 20 after, you know it's about to get real dark, up until about maybe 39 after, and then around 40, 45 minutes, last 15 minutes of the show, we're going to clean this thing up. And the 33 feels like that. You know, going in is a wonderful setup where they try to introduce you to some of the personal stories. Juliette Binoche plays a woman who sells empanadas in Chile, who walks around town. She is estranged from her brother, who's a minor. And their story plays out, how the two of them evolve and reconcile. Of course, Lou Diamond Phillips plays kind of like the foreman or the leader of the crew, who has kind of gone to management to tell them that the conditions are not as safe as they should be. And of course, management brushes them away and doesn't really have anything, don't want to hear anything he has to say. And of course, the character that Antonio Banderas plays is kind of a leader in, you know, like a hidden leader. He's kind of like a guy that a lot of people respect, but he's kind of quiet and he's, you know, a dependable family man. So the film really centers around these three storylines. And of course, within the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, there's a huge explosion. The rock moves, the mine caves in. And now begins the clock that they are trapped underground for nearly 70 days underground. There's limited food underground. There's no light underground. You know, the film doesn't address the sanitation aspect of it all. Thank God of what it must have smelled like down there. But there's a relief effort initially that's ignored because they're thinking that they would just kind of sweep it under the rug, kind of memorialize these 33 men and keep it moving. But it captures national attention, or international attention, I should say. And suddenly there's help from the United States and England and other large countries to try to get these men out. I think even as the story to me feels cookie cutter, there are several movies that are coming besides this one that are these inspirational stories that will almost make you cheer. And it's not necessarily about how good the movie is. It's about how strong the formula is. Because even knowing that the film is going to play out a certain way, and even knowing the end before you even go into the theater, the film, Ms. Riggins' film, director Patricia Riggins' film, still keeps you enraptured to a certain degree until you get to the end. And of course, the personalities of the men, the real actors that are involved. So on a grading system, I would probably give the 33 probably a C+, because having said that, I think that, you know, there's a reason why we call some movies formulaic. The formula sometimes can work for you and the formula can work against you. I think this is one of the times that the formula works to the film's advantage, that it you know, that along with Antonio Banderas' performance in the film, I think really sort of elevated for more than just a movie of the week that would play on ABC, NBC, CBS, to a movie that, you know, you would really consider spending $12, $13, $14 to go and support. So the 33 is a movie, as I said, that you can support. But know going in that it is more a byproduct of the formula of how Hollywood tells these stories versus what the film is itself. All right, up next is the latest film from one of Hollywood's most powerful couples, Angelina Jolie Pitt and her husband Brad Pitt. The film is called By the Sea. And it tells the story of a troubled American couple played by the Pitts who befriends a young newlyweds and local villagers while staying at a French seaside resort as Brad Pitt's character is working on a novel, which, you know, I'm not even going to tell you what the novel is called. You can't figure this out. You know what the novel is called. But let me give you a little detail on By the Sea. And By the Sea is a film that is written and directed by none other than Angelina Jolie. Now, the last time the two of these guys got together, of course, it was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It was a very entertaining film between the two of them. And I will just cut to the quick and tell you that this film is not that film. In this movie, it tells the story of a very interesting relational dynamic. Now, early on, as they show up at the seaside resort, the first thing that kind of happens is that they look at their room. They immediately rearrange the room in order to make it, quote unquote, writer friendly for Brad Pitt's character, who over the course of the film, a pattern kind of emerges between the two of them that plays out on screen. Angelina Jolie lays in bed or never leaves the room, and she looks as she is the most unhappy woman on the planet. Brad Pitt, his response to this is to leave their inn early, stay out all day at an inn in town or like a bar in town, drink himself until he's drunk, drag himself back to his room. The two ignore one another, go to bed, rinse and repeat the next day. This happens for 2/3 of the film. And part of the biggest issue with this movie is that in Angelina Jolie's mind, as she is writing this screenplay, there's supposed to be some strong emotional moments that show up in this film. Yes, they are some of these moments, but they happen so far down the line that I think by the time people get to that part, they have been bored out of their seats. The other interesting aspect of this film is that somewhere in the middle of the film, it takes a turn when they both discover that there's a hole in the wall that creates an experience that bonds the two of them together momentarily before it starts to erupt. The problem, and the biggest problem with this film, is that I've read some of the reviews and kind of, you know, and thought it through myself, and it's just that this $10 million vanity project by Angelina Jolie Pitt and featuring two of the industry's most beautiful and A-list actors, it's just boring. I mean, for people who complained about The Tourist, right, with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, man, The Tourist is like watching Furious 7 compared to this movie, man. This movie is slow. There's so many things that are unexplained, and somebody attempted to explain it to me last night, and I didn't care. There's this really crazy thing that happens throughout the movie that every time Pitt shows up in a room and he's, you know, taking everything out of his pockets and he's putting it down, that he sees his wife's sunglasses and they're always face down and he flips them up. And I said, well, what did that actually mean? He was like, hey, man, it's an inside joke. Never mind. Stop. Just stop it. So needless to say, don't waste your time. Don't waste your money. And there are too many other options out there for you instead of you sitting in the theater to watch this miserable couple by the sea. You don't need that in your life. I would give By the Sea a D. This movie is really the bane of my existence. Probably one of the worst movies of the weekend, and it really did not work for me at all. And it was funny because, you know, you would think it's always beautiful to look at Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, but it really did not work in this movie, man. It really didn't work. So, as I said, to recap the first two movies we talked about today, a C-plus for The 33, a D for Under the Sea. And I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to come back, and there are going to be more movies that we'll discuss. You guys are listening to The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, and we'll be right back.
Hey. out to the niggas, family men bringing home dinners. Watch out for desperate lonely women, hurt your happy home. Miserable and alone, kissable, nice to bone. She not the type deserving of a throne. Her beauty is her curse. She fuck for shoes and a purse. Make me a movie first. Can watch you on my phone. I shop in Barcelona. I spend some nights in Rome. Feel like a knight from England. That's what I named my son Knight. He was born to be one. That's how my game was won. White 740 Beamer. Lick by an angel's tongue. I'm living dangerous, son. She got a man, a famous one. Honey be pocket watching. She got a lot of options. Hard to make up her mind. Deciding which ball of the rock with. Hot to death, slim tickets, but I'm not impressed. She got the hottest sex, so I guess I'm a
yes, and of course that is none other again than Nas. Stay. Love that song, man. But welcome back to the show. It is now 46 minutes after the hour, and we are running down movies right now. Yes. Stay away. Somebody was in the chat room. Stay away from By the Sea. You do not need that in your life. Not in your life. In your life. All right? All right. Next up, we're going to go to one of my favorite genres, of course, which are foreign language films. And a film that is out of Germany that they were going to submit for the foreign language category for the Academy Awards was disqualified because it had too much English in it, but it's a film called Victoria, right? Now, Victoria tells the story of a young Spanish woman who is newly moved to Berlin and finds her flirtation with a local guy that potentially turned deadly as their night plays out and the friends reveal a dangerous secret. The film is directed by Sebastian Schipper, and it stars in the title role Olivia Nygaard-Holm. And this movie, you know, and before we get started with this movie, for people who watched last year's Oscar Best Picture winner, Birdman, with Michael Keaton. It was noted last year that the way that film was edited, that it was edited in one take, which basically means that the camera was set up in a place and like the entire film was filmed like with the camera following the action from start to finish. So of course they came out later on and said that wasn't the case. They just edited it together that way to make it appear that it was one take, but it wasn't one take. Well, this film, Victoria, is a one-take film. This film was directed in, I guess, the equivalent of real time, in one take. And it tells a story, and we follow Victoria, who shows up at a nightclub. As she's leaving the club and they're closing the doors, she meets four guys. And in the course of the night, she connects with one of the guys. And they hang out with Victoria until they really introduce what their motives are. And, of course, these guys are kind of gangsters, bank robbers. And Victoria is brought along, and all hell breaks loose in this film. Now, the thing that's really important to talk about with this film on the heels in the last segment when we talked about the 33 with it being formulaic, if you have ever spent any time watching foreign language films or films that are made outside of the Hollywood studio system, you hear me repeat this refrain over and over that I enjoy these films because of their level of unpredictability. One never knows what you're going to get from a foreign language film. Those films can go anywhere. They're not made with a certain formula in mind, with a certain, we got to have that, we got to get to the happy ending using that Love Boat analogy that I used earlier. So this film, of course, follows that you know, here's this young woman who's initially intrigued, and she's kind of like a party girl. She's intrigued by these guys, one guy in this crew particularly, and it seems that as the guys get comfortable with her over the course of this night into the early morning, they reveal more about themselves, they reveal more about how they want to have her be a part of what they're doing. And what they end up being a part of turns out to not be nice activity. But I think that the outcome of how it all plays out, there's a certain level of evolution that occurs in Victoria that to me makes this both a thrilling film and a very exciting film, not only to watch, but to recommend. If you live in a community that has art house theaters, you know, not the sprawling multiplexes that'll show you all of the Marvel movies or all of the other big blockbuster films, but like a smaller place, smaller art house theater, you need to check this movie out. Victoria, this actress is really, really good. The film has a lot of action, and as I said, I think the story really, really works. I would give Victoria a B-. I really like this film, and it's a shame that it cannot play in the foreign, or that it is not eligible for the foreign language category, because I would have loved to have seen it pitted against some of the other foreign language films that I've already seen that I think are as strong as this film is. Victoria is really a win-win, wonderful work in progress, and exciting to see Olivia Nearguard home. I would love to see them cast her in some American movie. I think that would be really, really nice. All right, my next movie, we go from the formula to the non-formula, seriously back to the formula with my All-American. And this film tells us it's based on a true story of, Freddie Steinmark, a young man who was from Colorado, who, despite being undersized, had the heart of a lion. Gets a scholarship to the University of Texas, along with his high school sweetheart, who accompanies him to Texas, plays for about 2 years before there is tragic misfortune in his personal life. This is based on a true story. This entire film is real, and the guy is real. It stars, I'm trying to think of the guy's name, Finn Wittrock, Aaron Eckert, Robin Tooney, and Sarah Bolger in my All-American. Now, this story, again, we talk about the formula. And, of course, you know going in, if you do any Google research on how this story turns out, but, again, a credit to the formula. For people out there who are familiar with a movie called Brian Song that starred James Caan and Billy Dee Williams that came out, like, in the early 1970s, it was a made-for-television film about Brian Piccolo, and I say it that way because that's the way they said it in the film, which I always thought was humorous. Brian Piccolo, and J.O. Sayers and Brian Piccolo's relationship and how close they got. They were both running backs. Piccolo, of course, had leukemia, and there's a famous scene at the banquet where Billy Dee Williams says, you know, before you go to bed tonight, I'd appreciate it if you just, before you hit your knees, if you say a prayer for Brian Piccolo. Well, basically, my All-American is the Brian Song of 2015. Almost identical circumstances. Identical circumstances about a guy who's blessed with great athletic ability, even though he's undersized, strong family, strong faith, strong support system around him. The coach of the University of Texas team at the time, of course, was Dal Royal. And this is based on the year that they won the national championship with young Mr. Steinmark, Freddie Steinmark. And, of course, again, like I said, it's a formula film. It's an inspirational film. But I think sometimes the formula works on certain films. Now, let's be perfectly honest. Is My All-American a great film? Nah, it's not a great film. Are there worse films than My All-American? Yeah, there are. Plenty of them. But this movie is worth your time. And I just wouldn't say that this is a film that you should go see and pay top full dollar. All right? This is not, you know, ladies out there, I know y'all don't care sometimes, but don't do your man that way. Do not force your man to take you for full price to see this movie. Now, if your man wants to take you in the afternoon, or say a Saturday or Sunday, because you're going to shop a little later on, you know, do that. But if you must see this movie, and a matinee is not the way to go, you can rent it online you can either go to Netflix, you can go on demand. Do not pay full price for this film, but it is a film that I recommend that you should watch. I hope that makes it kind of plain, if you use the economics of it all. This is not a $15 movie. This might be a $5 movie, five and under. So I'm not being mean or nasty to the film. I'm not saying that it's a bad film. I would give My All-American a C. For me, part of the issue with movies is that by virtue that I've had to watch them for so long, I'm rarely shocked by anything I see. And as I was sitting there, I was like 5 minutes in going, yeah, I see where this one's going. But, you know, I'm a strap in and enjoy the ride anyway. But my All-American, like I said, I think there were people who literally were crying in the theater. You know, it is kind of a sob story in that way. But I just don't think it's absolutely a good film. All right, I'm going to take one final break. And I'm going to come back on the other side. And when I come back, I'm going to have a declaration. You want to hear my declaration because I want you to mark it in stone. Today's date, today's time. Yeah, I said it. All right? You guys keep it where you got it. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. And, of course, I'll be right back.
I was young. I was surviving the times, waiting for my moment, I was destined to shine. Lil Ray had an NXX, I was hoping I'm next, wanting bracelets, never had a rope on my neck, unless I was holding Ty-A chain, rest in peace. Even though that night you flipped on us, you warned us, if you came back and we still in the corners, we goners. Moving on to, move your arm and your watch, to another time on the block, cause this 40 side, where they said shorty rhyme, tragedy he used to come through all the time. I'm talking juice food, not what the word defined. He had a sister named Erin, for sure was fine. That was my first crush, I bought my first mic, I wrote my first verse, I was about 9, I was about mine, fantasized house buying. Met Paul, he wore some big glasses, him and Mel Korn took me where G-Rap lived. I was happy, just getting some answers, I ain't even know what a record advance was. I'm seeing sex in the studio bathrooms with rap dudes thinking, wow, she moved me. Same girl then, right now's a groupie. Back then, she was like the star in the movie. Large jewelry and expensive Gucci. Next stop, paid in full posse, recruits me. Knew they were some millionaires, they ropes were dookie. Every B man looking like touchy, shooting. You see, every time Rod didn't show, I get to record demos at attempts to blow. I wonder, could they tell? How did they know? 16 years later, here I go.
All right, and welcome back to the Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. It is 58 minutes after the hour. And in my chat room, a question was asked that I did not answer. All the movies that we are talking about today are all in theaters tomorrow, tonight, and in some cases. You know how they release movies early. So everything is opening tomorrow. And then the next segment coming up, hold on a second, I just heard something in my ear. Give me a second, engineer. We're going to take care of this real quick. I love the hum. The hum means that we're stretching for time. All right, we got it. All right, so the final two movies today are, you know, without kind of reservation, to me, the best two movies that I have seen the entire 2015. I've seen 193 movies. If you want to see all the movies that I've seen, or I had an opportunity to screen, I should say, this year, if you have a Pinterest account, you can go to and join at Film Gordon. It is a, you know, I have my page of 2015 movies, or an easier way to do it would just be to go to my website, thefilmgordon.com. There's a Pinterest button on the side. If you scroll down, click on that, it'll show you a movie poster for every movie that I've had an opportunity to see this year. So out of the 193 movies, these two movies that I'm talking about right now, I can make a definitive statement. Both of these movies, as sure as my name is Film Gordon, will be nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. One of these two films is going to win the Oscar for Best Picture. Now, it is 2 o'clock on Thursday, what is this, November the 11th or 12th, whatever the day's date is. Write that down. Revisit me in, say, 2.5 months from now, or 3.5 months from now, and you'll be like, I remember Tim saying that. I'm telling you now, race over. I don't care what else is coming out next week, the week after that. These two movies are going to be in play for Best Picture, and one of them will win. So first up, and I'm not going to tell you which one I think is going to win. I know, but I'm not going to tell you. It is kind of cowardly. I should just – yeah, actually, I will tell you. But first up, one of the two best movies of the year is a film called Brooklyn. Brooklyn, of course, is a historical period drama directed by John Crowley, written by Nick Hornby, and based on Colin Tobe's novel of the same name. The film, of course, stars Saoirse Ronan, Emery Cohn, Dom Hall Gleason, Jim Broadbent, and Julie Walters. The film tells a story of a young Irish girl in the early 1950s who is in Ireland. Her sister sees that she can never blossom into the woman that she should be if she stays in Ireland. Contacts a priest in America. They arrange for a place for her to live, a job that she has, and pays her freight. And she goes to America. She comes to America in the early 1950s and settles in Brooklyn, where there is a large percentage of Irish Americans that are that have taken up residence, or Irish descendants that have taken up residence. Saoirse Ronan, or Saoirse Ronan, which is the correct pronunciation of her name, is Irish by birth, and this movie feels like a really personal story. Matter of fact, it's I had an opportunity to rewatch it last night because I initially saw it back in January at the Sundance Film Fest. This movie played last night like it played in January. Really personal story, real insular story that although it's very Irish, it's not so much to the fact that it's off-putting. The film is very warm, it's very inviting as we kind of observe this young woman's struggle. And her character's name in the film, let me make sure I get it right, is Ellis Lacey. Is Saoirse Ronan's character, Saoirse Ronan's character. And young Miss Lacey has a job by day in a department store. By night, she lives in a boarding house along with four other young ladies and a really headstrong woman who runs the house. This is old America in the early 1950s, so they eat together. There's conversation at the dinner table that is quite humorous. There are lots of kind of nods to the Irish culture that I think really, really work well. And you can feel the importance of the film. You can feel that although it's this huge story of this that centers on this young girl, it also feels kind of intimate and you're almost claustrophobic because you're in her life that she's homesick. Her sister who made the sacrifice for her, the exchange of letters is she's reading letters from Elise over in Ireland and Elise reading her sister's letters in tears here in America. It is such a wonderful movie. It also evolves into this love story or a love triangle as she meets an Italian American guy, an Italian guy who they fall in love. And the humorous scene where initially she is taught how to eat spaghetti without splattering sauce all over the family, only to go to the house. And, of course, there's the younger son of the guy she falls in love with, young boy who's about 8 or 9 years old, who just kind of speaks his mind. We hate the Irish. The Irish beat us up. So it kind of feels, like you have different ethnicities at work. But at the core, this is such a wonderful, life-affirming, such a warm, inviting tale that's well-acted. The screenplay is brilliant. So I'm predicting that this film is going to get a screenplay Oscar. It's going to get an Oscar for director. It'll probably be nominated for Best Picture. It will definitely get a nomination for Best Actress for Saoirse Ronan. And it will be in the mix to be voted for Best Picture this year. This movie is really, really good. I gave it an A in January. After seeing it again last night, I'm giving it another A. Brooklyn, one of the two best movies that I have seen this year This movie is fantastic. Oh, ladies, by the way, that basically means that tell your man to take you full price. This is a good one. All right. And the final movie of the day, can't stop thinking about it, can't stop talking about it, is this movie called Spotlight. Spotlight is an American drama directed by Thomas McCarthy, written by McCarthy and Josh Singer. It tells a story about the Boston Globe's Spotlight team, the oldest continuously operating newspaper investigative unit in the U.S., and their coverage about 15 years ago of the Massachusetts Catholic sex abuse scandal, for which that team won the Globe a 2003 Pulitzer Prize for public service. This movie features an all-star cast of Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Brian D'Arcy James, Michael Keaton, Stanley Tucci, Liev Schreiber, and Billy Crudup. And this movie here, you know, as it begins, right, it begins with the Globe kind of in upheaval. Its longtime editor-in-chief, Irish editor-in-chief, has retired, and they are in the process of welcoming in the new editor, who is a Jew, played by Liev Schreiber. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, just like we talked about the Irish roots in Brooklyn, the roots in Boston for Irish go really, really deep. If you can remember movies early this year like Black Mass with Johnny Depp, with Whitey Bulger and that whole Irish mob connection. So in Boston, the Irish and the Catholic faith are kind of synonymous. They run deep. And here, the first thing that Schreiber, the new editor-in-chief, wants to do is that he has when that there's a story that was kind of, a story that they didn't cover as kind of feverishly as they should have about sex abuse probably 20 or 10 years earlier in this film, that he urges them to drop what they're doing because the paper's readership is going down and it needs something sexy to bring this thing back. And he thinks that this is a story that has teeth. The problem is that the leader of the Spotlight unit, Michael Keaton, grew up in Boston and understands the institution for what it is, and that, you know, asking a court to unseal the records is akin to the newspaper suing the Catholic Church, which everybody thinks is a no-no and has no possibility of ever working. But at the behest of their new editor, they pursue this case anyway to discover, you know, first one dirty priest. And then the number goes up. And then as they investigate, the number goes way up. And now they are all in this case. And this case has cover up, you know, it's kind of a, not necessarily a whodunit, but a who knew it sort of a situation. Everybody in this film is on top of their game. Mark Ruffalo, who cashes checks playing the Incredible Hulk, you know, in the Marvel Avengers films and like his standalone film, is good there doing action. He's great doing dramatic work. Michael Keaton, who won an Oscar last year for Birdman, and he was great playing that role. When you give him a role he can really sink his teeth into, Keaton is all in it. He's great. Rachel McAdams, who has made some films recently, you know, if you remember her from True Detective, or if you early this year, I'm not sure if she was a Sicario or not. I think she was. But early this year, so she shows she can play gritty as well. Everybody here is on top of the game. And Stanley Tucci, who is playing kind of a representative for many of the victims, who is at first guarded when Mark Ruffalo's character approaches him and wants to talk to some of the survivors of this abuse. He's great. Every actor in this film is really on top of their game. The storytelling, the way this film is edited, the direction, everything about this film is really, really, really well done. I was laughing last night because we were still talking about the screening from several nights ago, and I was remarking to another film critic, I said, you know, the way you can always figure when I'm really engaged in a movie is when I'm watching it and you hear me just go, which was a sound for 2 hours of Spotlight. Spotlight is a revolution, is a revelation. Spotlight, in my estimation, before I even saw it, there was strong buzz on this movie as the leading film for an Oscar this year. I honestly believe that this movie is going to win Best Picture this year. I think it will be nominated in multiple categories. I think that the subject matter, teamed with the age of the voters and the sensibilities and where we are as a culture, this movie is perfect for now. This is a great movie that talks about such a heinous crime. If you're talking about adults abusing children and then being kind of moved around from parish to parish, Spotlight is great. I'm telling you now, this movie will affect you. This is the best film of the year. It's going to win the Oscar for Best Picture. Spotlight, 4, if I can go by my own scale and give it 4.5 stars, an A+. Spotlight is a great, great movie. So all these movies that we reviewed this afternoon are out in theaters now. You know where I sit on this. So please, as I tell you guys in closing every week, please see something good at the movies. Until next week, and we'll have more movies. But you know, before I get out of here, I just told you, the race is over, man. Between Brooklyn and Spotlight, you kind of make your choice. Those are the two best movies I've seen this year, which kind of spoils my top 10 show that we're going to do next month. But, hey, we do new radio every week. We're closing the book on 280. As I said, see something good at the movies. Until next week, I'm out. You guys enjoy your weekend.